From the land to Grand Teut University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is a special edition of the Closing Market Report presentations from the 2025 Farm Assets Conference, Ag Policy Objectives and Prospects. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Up next, a critical discussion on the evolving landscape of agricultural policy and markets. This panel features K.J. Johnson of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association, Brad Stotler from the Illinois Corn Growers Association, and Jonathan Kappas of the University of Illinois. Together, we'll dive into the pressing issues facing farmers today, including market shifts, political climate, trade and tariffs, and the Farm Bill.
Well, thanks a lot, Todd. Brad Stotler with the Illinois Corn Growers Association. A little bit about my background. I've been with Corn Growers for 3 years. Before that, I worked for Congressman LaHood. I've been in and out of trade associations and things of that nature, working in government affairs. Actually, way back in the day, I worked for Congressman Tim Johnson, and that's when I first met KJ here. He just graduated from ISU. I was at U of I, started to work for him, and so we've known each other for quite a while. Obviously, the man, the myth, the legend here, Jonathan Kappas. So it's been an interesting ride within public policy. I think when I was kind of coming here today, I was thinking about, you know, what are some words that you think about when you think about the congressional landscape right now? When you think about ag policy right now, it's, you know, is it predictability, certainty, bipartisanship? I mean, obviously not, right? That's a big no. It's partisanship. People are getting less interested in working with each other right now. And so, you know, how does this all go? I mean, from what I talked, when I talk to people on the Hill, others, there's a lot of members who are getting worn out. We're seeing that now with retirements. There's like 30 or 40 members who've already announced retirements. Illinois delegation-wise, we're going to see a big shift as well. We have our senior senator has announced his retirement, and that's caused after a long and distinguished career, by the way, in many policy areas, agriculture included, wanted to get that in there. But it's caused a cascade of retirements around the Illinois delegation for people to not only run for that seat, but then we're seeing it in other places. So Rajah Krishnamoorthi and Robin Kelly are retiring to run for that seat. Our lieutenant governor's also running for that Senate seat. On the Democratic side, there's Don Tracy from the Republican side is running. On the for other Illinois delegation members, you have Chewy Garcia, Danny Davis, Jan Schakowsky, also retiring from the Chicago area. So you're going to see a massive shift right now. If you all want to get involved in politics and start to work on a campaign, this is the year. You can find some places to help a campaign on both the Republican and Democratic side, because we have a governor's race as well. And so, I think that you know, my words were pretty tame. I've been watching Jonathan speak a little bit lately, and so he's got a much wider vocabulary than I do when it comes to farm policy and kind of the descriptions around that. But so I'll let him go for the colorful language on some of those policies. But I think generally from Illinois corn standpoint, I mean, we've seen uncertainty grow within our membership. We take an annual survey at our farm progress show, and this is before we've seen the payment announcements this earlier week. I mean, this morning we saw some more talk about that, and I don't know if we're going to kind of discuss and get into that, Todd, but we have seen people think about payments and the need for them. We've seen profitability uncertainty over the last several years, and we've heard a lot of people talk about that today. In our surveys, we saw, you know, Illinois corn growers have always been about markets, not payments, but the uncertainty has caused people, you know, kind of need for those to rise. We've seen those indexes and those kind of numbers that rise within our policy surveys. And so when we think about public policy, we're looking at, you know, we're thinking about expanding markets. How do we push more grain abroad in those kind of trade agreements? We're thinking about how do we improve corn grind in our renewable fuel space and ethanol? How do we raise blends? How do we talk about octane legislation to help that corn grind grow? And then finally, this is going to be an issue into the future, but when we think about risk management tools, how are they going to work for Midwest farmers into the future? And so the One Big Beautiful Bill has been you say that because you have to talk about it in that way, but that did a lot for farm policy. That's called the Reconciliation Farm Bill now, right? Because it took care of Title I. There were things about insurance in that bill as well. And so that is now in law until 2031. And so how will the Farm Bill look into the future is a big question mark.
Thank you very much, Brad. Let's move KJ to you. KJ Johnson is with the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. He's the president.
Yep.
I believe that's the correct title there.
That's correct.
And the incoming Illinois Soybean Association legislative liaison starting in January. Thank you for all your work. You do a lot of work both in Springfield currently and look towards Washington, D.C. When you were thinking about what the discussion should focus on from your point of view today, what did you land on?
So most of our stuff with IFCA that we have been working on nationally is all about tariffs. I mean, tariffs, and then more tariffs. This started in April with some of the tariffs that was proposed out there by the administration. It directly affects us, and most of you guys have heard it on fertilizer. I'm going to talk on the chemical side, too. We had the first thing that came out was Canadian tariffs, and I don't know if you guys know, but realize that most of the potash that comes into the United States is coming out of Canada. I would say about 90% of it is coming out of Canada. So if there's a 25% tariff, that's going to raise all fertilizer prices on the potash end. I farm in Champaign County with my father and two brothers. See direct effect how that is going to play out. But that's also played in some of the phosphate numbers are out there. Now there's some other stuff going on with the phosphate numbers we can get into later. But the biggest thing on nationally, we've been working on farm bill. We got smaller issues in the farm bill. We don't got the crop insurance, the commodity title, but it's on the tariff stuff. The president didn't come out here a couple of weeks ago and said we're pulling off those tariffs. I think that's a good thing. But then he came out when he did the release on whatever you want to call it, Trump money, whatever you want to call it, says, well, we might do something on Canada again. I mean, we are very much pushing back on that because, I mean, as much as we want to say we're going to produce it here, a lot of that stuff is not going to be produced here in the States. And I'll tell you, on the phosphate, a lot of guys are shutting down mines because the rock isn't profitable. And if it's not profitable now, then it ain't going to be profitable if it goes down $200 or $300 a ton. Also, so we're very much watching that, trying to push the administration to not support tariffs. But I will tell you, we belong to three national organizations, the Fertilizer Institute, Crop Life America, that works on pesticide issues, and Ag Retailer Association. They had a call with the administration sometime in October. And I think some of the guys on the talk thought they were going to get the rah-rah speech. It's going to be okay. We're going to work through the tariff stuff. That is not what we got. It was tough. We're doing tariffs, and they will come back out with that chart that says our imports are greater than our exports on this, and that's the driving factor on this. How does this play into chemical side stuff? It hasn't been really talked about, but I will tell you a lot of the generic chemical companies are very much worried about what tariffs come out, especially if it is out of China or India, very much. A lot of your active ingredients. That is the building block to build other chemicals long term come out of China and India. A lot out of India. If they put a tariff on India, that's the biggest worry that we have, that you're going to see those prices go up. The news has talked about fertilizer, but that's what we worry about. Stateside, I would just tell you guys, there's a whole different anti-pesticide bent at the Illinois State Capitol. We always talk about national stuff, but I will tell you, you need to watch here at home. A lot of bans on products. There's some different stuff out there, and we just saw, Brad and I saw, they're talking about putting a fertilizer applicator license out there, kind of like a pesticide license. So we are watching stuff. A lot of our time is spent like from there. So it's just a lot of different stuff, but mostly tariffs. We're just trying to fight back, but I think this is a broader view where the administration's going at.
And Jonathan Kappas, would you like to start with bridge payments? Would you like to start with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act? Would you like to start with tariffs? What piece of the pie would you like to eat today?
Well, the news of the week is the so-called bridge payment, which is maybe one of the oddest titled, I would say most embarrassing way to frame a payment. Because we got a bridge from $10 billion in the spring to $14 billion in the fall, I guess, is the thinking.
You might need to explain what those two.
So in the spring, the Economic Crop Assistance Program payments went out. That was $10 billion. That had been appropriated at the end of 2024. So that should have hit your accounts probably May. And then the OB3 Reconciliation Farm Bill ratcheted up reference prices and payment expectations in July. But as you all know, that stuff is a year delayed. So you won't see an ARC or PLC with the new changes until October of 26. And apparently, to KJ's point, you know, things are going so swimmingly well with tariffs and trade, we have to bridge with a $12 billion set of payments now. And then there's already talk about who's going to, I mean, I feel like there's a one-upmanship kind of game. So $10 billion by Congress, $12 billion by the administration. Will it be $14 by Congress? I don't know. But there's already talk about another round. So I think the concern is we're not fixing problems. We're not addressing problems. We're throwing an awful lot of money at problems that are going to be around a lot longer than I think payments will. So those are some of the challenges, you know. I love being the happy, bright, sunshiny, optimistic person in these pre-holiday meetings, so I appreciate that, Todd.
I want to bring you to a different part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, because I personally have been involved in the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. That's one of the things that I have liked to do in the past. And this disconnect between the farm bill and the food and feeding programs concerned me personally because of my background and how that might turn on producers in the future if there is not this collegial across the board feeling as it's related to a farm bill, which has generally been, what, 80% food and feeding programs and 20% farm programs, and without the ability, and the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, I think, took most of it away, to have to work with the with those representatives, both from rural and urban districts, that are food and feeding folks, as opposed to farm bill folks, feels like a really big issue to me.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. It used to be called food stamps. And since 1973, they've been in the same farm bill together, largely for a variety of reasons, but, you know, beginning political vote counting in the House in particular, but also the sense of, you know, farmers are in the business of producing food, so helping people buy food, there is a logic to that. The Reconciliation Farm Bill, this is one of the reasons why I think what we have long thought to be a farm bill is no longer the case. I mean, I think we have to sort of accept that that farm bill is dead, that it's gone, that it's done, and we've moved into something else. And what that looks like, I don't know. But they cut $200 billion out of SNAP. About $70 billion of that cut from SNAP was used to offset the cost of increasing reference prices and PLC, ARC payment calculations, and crop insurance calculations. That is what we have long called the cardinal rule of farm bills. What you do not ever do in a farm bill, and I got lectured about this when I started on the Hill, is you don't take from one pot and put it in the other, and you certainly don't take from food assistance and pour it into farm assistance. So what they did in the Reconciliation Farm Bill is break what is considered the most fundamental political rule for the Farm Bill. And that's why I'm not trying to be negative, but that's why my conclusions are all less than optimistic about what this looks like in the future. And I don't, to your question, I don't know, like, as Brad said, we got till 2031 before a lot of this reauthorization discussion happens, with the exception of CRP, Conservation Reserve Program. What happens between now and then, obviously, is a vast, vast unknown. But did you have, yeah.
Over the years, KJ can comment on this too, but I remember on the Hill, there were movements to kind of separate the farm bill away from food assistance, and bipartisanly, people used to talk about how if anyone was serious about ever passing a farm bill, you know, I've never seen a proposal that was serious to pass a farm bill by splitting the two apart. And then here we are in this world. And so, you know, we have several of the titles now through 2031, and then we'll have kind of, you know, obviously all the others on this September extension time frame into next year. And then, you know, so then you hear on the Hill, well, let's start up negotiations on these other titles. But with kind of the discussion around all of the different payments, it just hard, it, and then other things that are going on in Congress, it's going to be a challenge and for us as an ag community, for us to come together and try to repair that traditional farm bill approach is going to be something that we all need to think about and work together on.
100% agree. I think it's, I'll just be honest, completely asinine that we separate them. Because I will go back and say, when I was working for Tim in 02 and 08 when we passed farm bills, you guys remember Jesse Jackson Jr. was a congressman from Chicago, and I remember our boss talking to him like, hey, we want votes to be show bipartisan. And he's like, as long as the nutritional stuff's in there, I'm a yes vote. If we take that away, we're not going to get it. Now, Jonathan's a Senate guy, us guys, or the House guys, the better part of the side of the Congress, the House side. But I also know we have a hard reality. Every senator has to listen to agriculture because everybody's got ag in their state. But there's truly out of 44 at the best day, out of 435 members have to answer to agriculture in the House. It's easy to pass a farm bill, and John had the easy part. The House guys had the hard part to pass stuff. But if we separate them, guys, there's going to be no votes on that.
Wait, only 10% of the House?
On a good day, I would say.
On a good day.
On a good day.
On a favorable count.
Yeah. And I hate to say this, it's all about counting votes. You got to count noses at the end of the day. And that's why it makes this all much different. And we can push all that stuff. But the other thing I see in farm bill stuff, and this is just my own personal opinion, there's going to be a prod. We never get a farm bill across the board. Jonathan knows this, he can't answer this, and some of you guys know this. When's the last time we passed a farm bill in an odd number year? So the odd number year is not an election year. 1985. Right. We have to have a push of an election to get something across the deal to pass something. And we need every vote in the House to get it across the finish line.
Wasn't that the year that they did?
Sodbusters.
Okay.
CRP, yeah. And I can't say why what the push was, but that's the last time they passed an odd number farm bill.
Okay. I suspect some of you have either comments or questions, either are welcome. Anybody want to ask a question about policy?
100% of people
or have
like
a comment? Okay, good.
Yeah, the 100% of the people like to eat, though.
Oh, just a comment.
Just a comment.
Yeah.
That is true.
Very true, but you still got to count votes.
Yeah.
I totally 100% agree, but you got to count votes at the end of the day.
Right. The dynamics as well is that, in an odd year election, so after the presidential election, if the House, I know there's a lot of politics going on for Republicans to retain majorities in both the House and Senate. So politically, people will be watching that. But if the House were to flip or... what are the priorities going to be for Democrats? It's going to be to claw back a lot of things potentially that they felt that they were that people didn't work with them on during the reconciliation package. And so you're going to have a whipsaw effect going on in Congress now around that policy.
Yeah, and I just will not accept that slander on the United States Senate. That's horrible. The one thing I want to just touch on what Brad said, because that's true, you're going to have, there's the whipsaw pressure. The problem is the dollars we're talking about, right? You got to remember $200 billion were taken out of SNAP. So for Democrats to say, hey, we want to repair or refix or redo whatever, in congressional budget rules, unless they get rid of those and come up with something better, which that would be a wonderful start if they did, because the budget rules are a mess. But under the current system, you got to find $200 billion somewhere else. And that money doesn't exist. So the challenges for anybody to repair it are really big. And that's assuming CBO doesn't think it costs even more than it did to cut, which is likely what's going to happen. So, and I see this guy's a question, so I don't want to ramble too much on the bad nonsense of congressional budgeting. But the mountain is steep.
I have more nonsense for you. Don't get me wrong. Agriculture has been good to me. Farmed for 40 plus years. I spent a lot of money on checkoff dollars. We funded new technology, improved ag, but you doubled doubled the yields. But we still have bailouts. We still have tariffs that are ridiculous. We haven't learned anything from history. When I started Earl Butz, John Block, people like that said, your job is to feed the world. And I took that seriously. But we, how do we ever solve this? I mean, we lost USAID and SNAP, and do we ever solve the problem? I mean, the education process is there, but nobody's listening in Congress. So it's hard to be optimistic. I feel it's, you feel the futility. You talk to other farmers, and they bought into this, and now it's like, why should I do any of this when all I have to do is wait for another welfare check? So that's my comment. There's a lot of questions in there, and I hope there's some education that goes in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a really tough point, and I said it somewhat sarcastically, but
I wasn't sarcastic.
I understand, and it's how I have a thin hold on sanity most days, and so that's my mechanism right now. But there begins to be a cycle of this, right? And what worries me that we see over and over is payments. Well, those payments didn't work because costs went up, so we got to add more payments because costs went up, and then costs go up, and we add more payments. So part of the concern I hear you raising, which is I share, is that it keeps building on itself, and this, if it's a one-upman type game where Congress now sees it has to put money in, we're feeding a problem, and we're not solving a problem. So I agree with you on that. I think it's a huge concern. But as I've heard, nobody who I will name in this room, but as I heard, very good point, right? What are you going to do? You're not going to not take the payment. I mean, they're putting a lot. The problem of this policy is you're kind of in a situation that doesn't get easier or better. And I don't know what that answer is. So I agree with your comment about how challenging this is. I worry that a lot of this stuff is, you know, you can run around D.C. and proclaim how great you are at procuring more payments, and it feeds on itself. And some of your other commodity organizations, not in the state of Illinois, are really active about this, and they are driving a lot of this discussion. And so what may work in a state like Texas may not be the ideal situation for a state like Illinois. And you're kind of getting dragged through that with them. And I think that's problematic, but I'll stop there because...
We are sharing sentiments with our legislators about the idea of these payments, to Jonathan's points, they're going to be taken, but the prices of inputs are staying high. How is that? There's not a reflection of lower input costs because of lower commodity prices. And so a lot of this becomes, in the farmer's hand, and then to a supplier. And so we are sharing those sentiments with lawmakers. And I think as you all, however you personally feel about some of this, I think when you're talking to lawmakers, we have to at least be honest and talk about that point as well.
I'll take my point. I totally agree with you, but I will say it starts with redistricting. Scott, I think Indiana did a great thing yesterday and said we're not going to redistrict. If we, the other thing I look at, and I'll argue with anybody, all primary, or everything in Illinois is on a primary. It is not on a general election. Tell me one seat in Illinois, a congressional seat, that is truly a 50-50 seat that's going to flip back for it. It's all about the primary. And that is redistricting, and we have become harder on hard right and hard left. I will tell you the other thing is, and this I'll go off soapbox, but members aren't talking to each other. They're not having dinners. You guys talk about backroom deals and all that, but that's where trust is made. And members aren't having trust with each other anymore. That's what I've seen over the last 20 years. We have went away from the trust of, can you talk to each other? And that's bad, but it's a lot about redistricting. We go back to, I don't say fair map, there's nothing fair, but open seats in the general elections, we'll go back to the center and try and work some of this stuff out. But if we get more divided and going to go just to a Republican district or a Democratic district, we ain't going to move some of this stuff.
Comments or questions out here? One last policy thing. The president talked about this when he was talking about the bridge payments earlier this week. And it was on manufacturing and regulations. What do we know as it's related to easing off on the regulations? Anything, and whether EPA might be involved, and that was what we got, was
I mean, my guess is, and I don't know, KJ's probably closer to this than it's going to be EPA. So pulling back environmental regulations is absolutely a priority of the administration. But it's also, dare I say, a lot of marketing, for lack of a better word. I think it's a lot of how do we get through this moment, this news cycle, this problem we've created, so we're going to say this thing, and then tomorrow it'll be the other thing. And so I don't know. I mean, you see the news this week, China now topped $1 trillion in trade surplus. Manufacturing jobs are down. Like, we are looking at, again, a series of problems we're not solving. And so, you know, I think a lot of this is throwing convenient talking points at a problem. But I would, if anything happens, it's going to be, it'll be environmental regulations.
Any final word from each of you before we make it to the way, our way to lunch? I did not expect this to go this way, by the way. I really did not.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Well, Todd, you left it wide open on the agenda, so.
I did. Yeah, I did. No, I purposely left it right open on the agenda because I like to see where things go.
I said it earlier, but I'm going to say it again. We always talk national issues, but guys, you need to focus on a lot of state issues. There's more stuff. Everything's local. Your county board probably has more say over you than what the national does. The state has more than the national does. But there's a lot of state issues on agriculture that we need to be watching. And I know, again, usually I get kind of 9 out of 10 times, it's on national news, but we need to watch what's going on at the state.
It's not local for here, but can you talk a little bit about the Iowa concern about water quality?
I am not the best one to talk on that. I'll just say, but I cannot remember the guy's name from Des Moines Water Works.
Oh, what's his name?
Bill Stowe.
Bill Stowe. He has passed away, but a lot of that has definitely quieted down. We're not hearing near as much stuff out of Iowa what we used to. Good, bad, or indifference. I just tell you, you don't hear near as much. I think we are working on stuff here. I think we're going in the right direction, but you're not hearing near as much as what you had 10 years ago when I first started with IFCA. Really?
Question. I'm not in the business of speculating on what the Supreme Court's up to, but it is, in my mind, it could be the other elephant in the room, right? You know, we've heard all summer that any sort of economic assistance is going to be coming off of tariff revenue, right? But that tariff revenue is under challenge currently. You know, what do you see happening if the Supreme Court comes back with that more extreme decision to, you know, refund tariff revenue?
That is a great question and a very difficult. So prognosticating about the Supreme Court is maybe only slightly less difficult than some of the other things. If I had to guess, the Supreme Court will strike down the use of IEEPA, the International Economic Emergency something Act,
Protection
Act. But we'll probably find a way to navigate between having to make repayments, and then I presume they've got backup plans of other statutes they're going to use to continue the tariff policy. Because I don't think the administration's going to relent on tariff policy anytime soon. So I think you kind of get into a whack-a-mole situation of, okay, you can't use that statute, so now you use this statute.
These payments, though, too, are under the CCC authorization, and so it wouldn't impact these recent discussions around the $12 billion that's coming to farmers. So those payments are paid not through tariff income. They're paid for under a different authorization in Congress. So it wouldn't impact the recent announcement on the $11 billion coming to farmers by February.
Don't want to add anything, but on that issue, but talking about Supreme Court, everything you guys need to be watching, the Bayer lawsuit with Supreme Court, because that is going to directly affect how pesticides look into the future. That is a huge case. I don't know if you guys saw the Solicitor General asked the Supreme Court to take up that case. And it pretty much says, in a nutshell, if EPA approves that pesticide, that it is safe, that is it. Because I don't know if you guys have known, Bayer spent, well, this is a couple months ago, $66 billion to defend Roundup. That is a huge issue, and it doesn't, not getting a whole lot of talk, but if the Supreme Court doesn't take up that case, I hate to see what happens with Bayer.
Give them a nice round of applause. Thank you.
KJ Johnson is with the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association, Jonathan Coppas with the University of Illinois, and Brad Stotler is from the Illinois Corn Growers Association. You've been listening to a presentation made during the 2025 Farm Assets Conference held in Bloomington at the Agri Center. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.